I'd like to introduce our last speaker. Many people refer to this speaker as the closing speaker or the spiritual speaker, but if you were here and you got an opportunity to sit in a workshop, they're all spiritual speakers, right? But this individual, this happens to be our last speaker for this retreat, which makes it kind of special. And they get an opportunity to kind of sum up and close the retreat. And truth be told, this gentleman has been around for a while. You probably see him at many, many retreats. He's always involved in doing service. And he has a very gentle, warm, welcoming spirit. And it dawned on me why nobody ever asked him to be a speaker before. Especially if you're thinking of somebody from, to speak on spirituality or spiritual maintenance or just to be a spiritual speaker. He does a lot of listening to other speakers, but he very seldomly has the opportunity to speak. So, here at the Unity Retreat, we try to do things different, so we give him the opportunity to speak. And I'd like to introduce to you Chuck D. from the Serenity Group in Pittsburgh.
Good morning, everybody. I'm an addict named Chuck, and I want to thank you for, as an area, being so wonderful in my life. Now, I already got my tissue, because I had a funny feeling this is going to be one of the moments, but it feels kind of real good, you know, when somebody asks you to do something that you like doing, but from that point of view over there. Okay? But before we go any further, I'm going to ask that y'all pray the way you pray. I'm going to pray the way I pray. Together we're going to invite a very loving and caring God in here, and then we'll see what happens after that. Okay, lately I've been thinking about my life and my recovery and what would it have been like if I'd have done things differently. You know, I could have been like a lot of other people. You know, I got clean, I could have went out and bought me a nice big car, you know, a whole lot of clothes. I could have probably chased a whole lot of girls. Well, I kind of did that, you know, but... You know, in a different way, you know, and I probably could have had a whole lot of things that would probably have gotten in my way of my recovery. And I'm going to put it just like that. Instead, I kind of went on a different journey. The journey that I went on almost caused me to use. It put me in situations where I wasn't accepted in a lot of groups in Narcotics Anonymous. I was sharing with somebody, there were some meetings that I could go to, and I could raise my hand, and they wouldn't let me share. Because I went to some other areas, and I seen these people recording these meetings, and I used to get these tapes. And I would sit in my room by myself and listen to them. And it was something that when you do something like that, and you pray and you listen, you get a different side of recovery. I remember sitting in a dark room, listening to somebody like Dot Tally, God bless her, a guy like Beto, Jimmy Kay, Beaver, the Beaver, and so many others. My favorite, Motorcycle Ed. I like Motorcycle Ed because Motorcycle Ed, he had this voice, you know, and he rode a motorcycle. And I identified because I used to ride a motorcycle, and I would listen to this guy, and I had never met him. And I was at this retreat, and he was there all weekend. And then I would happen to be standing beside him, and I heard him say three words, and I turned around and said, "Man, you're Motorcycle Ed." And he said, "Yeah, ever meet you?" I said, "Man, you walked me through recovery like nobody else ever walked me through recovery." And then I went on a little thing, learning how to record recovery meetings. Okay? And I'm going to say that a lot of people told me I was stealing from Narcotics Anonymous. And they didn't like what I was doing. But I had some people who stood behind me. And they said, "Chuck, don't give up." Cut to the chase, 15 years, 16 years later, I got more recovery tapes than anybody I know except maybe Rich. Okay? I got many people speaking for the first time. I got people who done some heartfelt leads. I got some memories like you just would never understand if you wasn't there. And I wouldn't change my recovery for nothing in the world. Because I was blessed in ways many of y'all will never be blessed. Okay? And I'm going to say it just like that. Because sometimes when you go to a meeting and you sit down and you listen to somebody, and you just listen to the person, and you're quiet, and your spirit's open, and you just want to be fed, and you allow God to feed you through this person, you can leave a meeting feeling so uplifted that can't nothing get in the way of your recovery. And I learned something, that I heard a guy say that, "Man, look, all I need is one meeting a week. My only problem is I don't know which one that I need. So I need to go to a lot of them to hear the message that I need to hear." And that's what I did. And my motivation, truthfully, wasn't money. Because if I really wanted money, there were so many other things that I could have did. Okay? A lot of things that I could do and still do. But it's just that I got this love for this fellowship and these people that I've been meeting. I don't know about you, but all the love I ever looked for in my life I found in Narcotics Anonymous. I ain't never had so many people accept me just the way I am without asking for anything else. Even though some of them said, "Man, can I get a free CD?" Many times I ask the person what you're going through, and if you can tell me, "I got a CD just for you." Because I listen to what you got to say to me. And you've blessed my life, man. Look, when I came in recovery, my very last day of using, this is how recovery exposes things to you and brings things to you. My last day of actual use was October 8th, 1993. It was a Thursday. It was about 2:30 in the afternoon. And my partner Hank was going, "Man, what you going to do? What you going to do?" And I didn't really know what I was going to do. And I heard a voice say, "Follow me." And so this voice led me to a couple different hospitals who refused me. But in recovery, I learned that I have to go to a place of humility if I want to recover one day at a time. Until I realize that place and get there, I'm not going to be able to recover one day at a time. It took me to a hospital that I had been committed to for being crazy, as they said. And I don't know if you've ever been in a psych ward, but they got these like green colored walls, and they give you these funny pills that they tell you would make you feel better. And I still have the picture of my mother and I being there, where my head is bigger than the rest of my body. I got a beard down to here. My hands are looking huge, you know. And, you know, it was just like the look on her face was, why do I have to go through this? You should see the look on my mother's face these days. It's no longer, why do I have to go through this? See, my mother made a sacrifice. She said very simply, I can't help you no more. You need to get away. I know you've heard that thing about the gift of desperation. The gift of, this is the bottom, after the trapdoor bottom. That gift where there's no place else for me to go. I share with my sponsee how I had been walking one day, and I had this real big hole in my shoe. And I walked through this alley, and there was a shoe sitting there. That was this right left foot, and it didn't have no hole in it. And I took my shoe off, put that shoe on. The only problem was, I wore an 11, and this was a 13. So, like, I had some extension on this foot. But I did not care because I was about to cop. It's something when you get to a state that copping is more important than you. I pray to God I don't never feel that way again. But that's just one of the stories in my life. Because when my mother gave up on me, I didn't know where to go. So I had to go back to the hospital that had committed me before. And when I said I was crazy, they looked at me and said, no, you ain't. And I had to think, how can I get in this hospital? Because something's telling me I need to get in this hospital. So I went outside, came back in and said, I think I'm having a heart attack. And they took me in. Checked me out. They said, you're not having a heart attack, even though your heart's racing about maybe 200 beats a minute. Crack kind of do that to you, you know? And they said, we can't find nothing wrong with you. And I remember laying on that gurney and that doctor looking at me. And I said, listen, I have a drug problem and I need some help. And I remember her looking at me and walking out the room. And I remember the feeling I got inside, like, you finally admitted that you got a problem. The problem with admittance is I have a disease that will talk me out of my problem. And my disease said, man, we don't need this. We okay. Let's get up out of here. But for some reason or another, I wouldn't listen. See, because like, when I heard that voice say, follow me, I kind of said, whoever you are, help me. I don't know who you are, but I need your help. Please help me. So this doctor came back in the room and she said, we can't help you. You got to leave. I said, listen, if you don't help me, there's a river a couple blocks from here. I'm going to go jump in that river and then you can have my body. She looked at me and left again. My disease got real nervous. See, when you're equipped with the right equipment, and sometimes you don't even know the equipment that you got, in the very beginning it simply helped me. Okay? And when I asked for help, the help came. Because she came back and she said, you know, we got you a room here. You need to go to this place. Can you get there? And I said, it don't matter if I got to walk. I'm going to get there because I was broke. I had spent every dime that I had already Nobody wanted anything to do with me. There wasn't anybody I could call and say, would you help me? Because nobody wanted to hear that anymore. What do you think about having a higher power in your life? When God says He's going to help you, He's going to help you. I reached in my pocket, and I remember having these painter plant pants on. I couldn't tell you where I got them from. But some pants develop a little corner up in the upper top of the pants that you may think something's in the bottom and rub your hand and find something up in the top. I stuck my hand in my pocket and I hit something. And I pulled it out and it was a $20 bill. My disease said, told you we didn't need this, man. Come on, let's go get this. But a feeling inside said, let's get to this hospital. In fact, on your way, let's go buy something to eat. Because eating had to have been something that I'd been doing. So I went to McDonald's and I bought the best meal that I had in a while. One of those Happy Meals with the little toy inside. Okay. See, I got a McDonald's story that tells you how I was downtown and I was hungry and some little kid had a Happy Meal and he was playing with the toy and I snatched his burger and ran. A lot of things I did I ain't so proud of, but the many things that I ain't so proud of, I'll share with you. Because I'm not going to let the things that I'm not so proud of stop my recovery anymore. I want to get better. There's only one way that I can get better. That's by me accepting me as I am right now. And allowing myself to grow from this point. If I interfere with my spiritual growth, I'm not going to get anywhere. I went to this hospital. The people that was there wanted me to leave. Because one guy told me he was an expert in recovery. He'd been there 5 times. I said to him, if you're an expert, why do you have to keep coming back here? He told me, oh, you'll find out. So, at this hospital, to back up a little bit, a friend of mine came to my house one day with a basic text. And it had the nice, smooth, blue lining on it. And I'll say a gram, but it was probably a 25-cent thing of cocaine. Dumped it on it, made some nice lines on it. You know, basic text, you can do some nice lines on a basic text. It was a 4th edition. Okay, we did the coke. And he left the book at my house. And I remember calling home and saying, if somebody would bring me some clothes in that book, I'll give them my bus pass. October 8th, a monthly bus pass is still worth 2 stones. There was a fight in my house because everybody in my house was still using. My sister won. My sister brought me some clothes and that basic text. And I gave her the bus pass. I love God. Because my sister got 5 years clean now. And I love the fact that she's clean. So I get this basic text and I start reading it. If you're new, I don't suggest you to do this. Because I read the first step and said I was powerless over drugs. And that's all I heard. And I said, probably right. And I read the second step, that we came to believe in a higher power. I said, probably right. And I came to the third step, and it says, you make a decision. And I said, I'll have to think about that. And I looked at the 4th step, and I said, I don't need this. And I did the 5th step, And I admitted to the guy who told me he was the expert in recovery the exact nature of my wrong, that I ran out of money. I ran the sixth step. I did not have any character defects because I didn't know what they was. So I didn't need a seventh step. I got to the eighth step and got to the phone and called everybody and told them how sorry I was. When I got to the ninth step, God said, look, I've got enough of this. We need to stop right now. This is a blessing. Thank you, Leonard. I couldn't pee one morning. I was supposed to get out. I didn't know where I was going, and I couldn't pee. Now, I don't know if you ever had a problem where you couldn't pee, but not being able to pee is not a good feeling, especially if you want to. Okay? I started going into convulsions. They rushed me to the emergency room. They immediately operated on me. I had a spot on my bladder, and my bladder had swollen up. On my prostrate weather, and it's swollen up and cut off my urinary tract. And they operated on me right there, and they told me if you'd have been anyplace else, you'd have died. See, I know God orders our steps if we're willing to listen to the orders. Our orders aren't all that hard. He says simply, follow the path that I've put before you. That's all I need you to do right now. Sit down, relax, and go on this ride. I didn't know where to go after that happened. But because that happened, I got introduced to a social worker. And the social worker says, don't worry, we'll put you on welfare right quick. We'll get you da-da-da-da-da. And another thing, where are you going from here? I said, I don't know. She said, aren't you a vet? I said, yeah. She said, we got a place for you to go if you want to go. And I said, I don't know. She said, you need to go. I said, okay. And I went to a rehab. The same guy went to the rehab with me. He was an expert there too. Okay? He told me, don't worry, I know the ropes. I'm still wondering why he had to be there five times at that time, but he wouldn't tell me. So we get to this rehab, and I still have this basic text. And I read this chapter, Who's an Addict? And I said, I'm not an addict. I just got a problem with drugs. Okay? And let me say this, that in between the rehab and the detox that I was in, you get a chance to relapse. Because I had 2 days before I could be admitted to the rehab on the street. I'm going to give it to you like this. Because of my profession at the time, I was told that I needed to go to a place for impaired professionals. Now, I ain't never got hired with none of them, okay? But I was told, because of my profession, I need to go here. I said, okay. In the detox, I was told, you need to go to an NA meeting. I always learned nothing from nothing, always left nothing. Narcotics and all sound familiar, but I knew about narcotics. I didn't know nothing about impaired professionals. So I got both numbers. I called the impaired professionals, and they never called me back. I called Narcotics Anonymous, and this guy wouldn't let me hang up the phone. He just wanted to talk and talk and talk. I didn't know that years later, well, not actually months later, this guy was going to be my grand sponsor. But he was just talking to me on the phone, telling me about me. He says, man, look, you're just anxious. You got this feeling inside. You really just need to come to this meeting and come on down and just meet us and see what's up. You know, he says, I was in your shoes. I know how you feel. Come on down. You know, it ain't no big deal. If you don't like it, man, you know, we'll give you bus fare back. I may even lend you $5. That was at a time where if you didn't know whether you was done or not, they would give you money. They don't do that no more. You know? So, I took this guy up on it. And I went. And I remember going to this very first NA meeting. And I was like in here, and I was checking out this. And then I see something strange. I seen a guy in there that I got high with a week ago, and he told me he had 5 years clean. But I said, wow, he's in charge. He's up front. He's telling everybody what to do. I'm like, this might be fun. Besides, I got high with him last week, and I was sitting in the back of the room because I didn't know nothing about critical care, okay? And so I'm back there talking with everybody else that was talking, and I said, man, I just got high with him. And the guy's next to me, he said, are you sure? I said, yeah, me and him was at the Bell. He said, the Bell? I said, yeah. He said, do you know what year this is? I said, yeah, it's 93. He said, man, they tore the Bell down in 87. I said, 87? He says, yeah, man, that guy got 5 years clean. I seen him around for a while. And I was like, 5 years and not using drugs? I just couldn't believe that. But then I went to another meeting. And then I went to the wrong meeting. The wrong meeting was, for some reason or another, I got this meeting thing in me, and I wanted to go to another meeting, and the guy said, there ain't no more meetings. And I said, there got to be another one. And he said, here, go to this one. An amazing thing happened. I went to this meeting, and I went in the way I always went into meetings in the beginning. I would have my head down, and I would walk until I found a seat, and I would sit down. And when I sat down and I looked up, I noticed there was nothing but women in here, and they were all looking at me. And they one whispered, Chuck, you know, this is a women's meeting. And I said, no. And I have to share this with you. Being embarrassed was one of the worst things that I could ever go through. I hated it. If you would embarrass me, I would never come around you again. I would just stay away from you. But when I got up to leave, the women said, you don't have to leave if you need to be here. And I was like, look, I'm going to go down to eat to my favorite restaurant, which was still McDonald's, okay? And they said, but if you need to be here, just stay with us. I said, no. They said, well, there's another one at 8 o'clock. We'll be waiting for you. I went to McDonald's. I showed up at that 8 o'clock meeting. There was 8 or 9 women sitting at that door waiting for me. And they welcomed me. And I felt like I was home. Like, this is where you belong, Chuck. Then I went on to the rehab. And the guy told me, when you go to this rehab, read this book while you're there. Listen to those people. Don't leave before the miracle. I didn't understand the miracle. I didn't know what a miracle was. They said, don't leave. Stay there. Look, nobody ever remembered my name before. The only time they remembered me was to tell me not to come back, don't come here, or get out right now. Okay? You know, I was the guy that I would get a check, and I was good while I had the check. Once the check was gone, I had to be gone. I was the guy that crawled around on the floor, stared out mirror, out windows, looked up in outer space, talked to myself. They didn't want nothing to do with me. I stunk most of the time. It was like, look, he's crazy. Even in recovery, people in my neighborhood said I would never stay clean. They told me that guy will never be right. There's nothing that you can do for him. Just leave him alone. Man, I'm going to tell you something about Narcotics Anonymous. You give Narcotics Anonymous a chance, it'll give you a chance like you ain't never had in your life. It'll give you things that you ain't never believed that you can have. And get this, Narcotics Anonymous is so powerful, it can help you change the way other people think of you. But all you have to do is stay on the path and do the work. I got to this rehab. I stayed there. I started changing. I stopped lying. People said, man, you ain't with us. This was the guy who'd been there 5 times. He said, you're changing. I'm like, this book said I'm supposed to change. But man, come on in the bathroom and smoke cigarettes and tell us of the lies that we be, because we know you got some lies. And I was a liar. I was so good when I was young. My friends, if we got caught, they pushed me up front because they knew I had a story. I always had a story. I try to tell my grandson today, man, lying is the worst thing that you can do because nobody will ever believe you even when you're telling the truth. You think that little boy that cried wolf had problems? Grow up being a liar. Okay? Be 35 years old and not know how to tell the truth. And have everybody look at him and say, look at you and say, he's a liar. He don't know how to tell the truth. Look at you and say, if anything happened and you was around, you did it. No matter what. I'll tell you, in recovery, I got clean, and this is just a sidebar. One time I got a phone call, a guy called me, he said, Chuck, man, you hope you're okay? Car's all right? Okay, I'll see you later. Bye. What is he talking about? What it was he called, he told his wife he was out all night hanging with me and my car broke down. And that's why he was so late getting home. He called a friend of mine and told him, my friend said very simply, why would you say that about Chuck? Chuck don't do that kind of stuff. It's something when people see the change in your life so tough, when they say about you, he don't do that kind of stuff. It's so nice to be able to say about yourself, I don't do that kind of stuff. Look, I like the life I got. I've been blessed beyond measure. I'm broke most of the time, but I don't even care. Because I can feel good about who I am and the way I live. It's real good when you look in the mirror and like yourself. I remember one time, man, I had about 6 months clean. I looked in the mirror and I had to jump back. I didn't know who I was looking at. And I peeked around and tried to get another look, and I was just grinning at myself, and I realized I was looking at me, and I was liking the reflection. You know, have you ever heard that thing about what God does for us? He works on us, and through the steps, He burns that stuff out of us that we don't need. Through our tears, through our anguish, through the pain that we have to go through just to get through. When he tells us to stand still and let me bring you through, don't try to get through this by yourself, and all that dust and all that foul stuff gets burned off, and the next thing you know, you're glowing, and he's seeing you're his reflection in you. That's what happens to us when we get to glow. We're Jason, man. Jason, man, you don't know what you did for me when you told me you celebrated a year. I love when somebody celebrates a year because it does something to me to let me see, man, this stuff is still working. And it works. You're like the blessing in disguise when I seen you and you said, man, I got a year. And the smile on your face and the way you feel about yourself now, man, that year just makes you step up. And if you ain't got it yet, go for it. Because I promise you, when you celebrate that year, you're going to feel like, ooh, goodness, I. Because that's the way we feel. We feel good inside. We start just feeling the life that's starting to come back in us like we ain't never had life before. I remember me having this book in a rehab and them telling me, you don't need that book. We got what you need. But this book was telling me, Chuck, you don't suffer from, get this, heroin. You don't suffer from cocaine, crack, or alcohol. You suffer from the disease of addiction. That's what we're going to address. They was telling me, look, the crackheads, y'all go over here. The heroin addicts, you go over here. Narcotic narcissists, come here. With open arms, we say, come here. Be here with us. We're going to show you how to address this disease of addiction that we suffer from. I remember getting out of the rehab. And I remember doing just what you told me to do. Ooh, I hate that. If I leave anything, just excuse me. Nice thing about it, I'm no longer trying to eat it because I'm hungry. But get this. I remember getting out of a rehab. Getting out of this rehab and doing exactly what you told me to do. I went home. I dropped off my bags. I didn't kiss anybody. I didn't say, how am I looking? Get this. When I got out of the rehab, everybody had somebody to pick them up except for me. You know who met me when I was stepping out? God. He was waiting for me. He said, Chuck, follow my direction. I walked out and there was a bus waiting for me. Caught that bus, got down in the middle of East Liberty, there was another bus waiting for me. That bus got me downtown. I got downtown. The bus that took me home was waiting for me. I got on that bus and dropped my stuff off, come running back outside. The bus that was going to take me back downtown was coming down the street, and I got on it. When I got downtown, the bus that was taking me to my very first meeting was sitting there, and I got on it, and I walked to my very first meeting. And when I walked in the door, I did just like you told me to do. H&I is so beautiful and will give you such wonderful information that if you follow the instructions, you're going to be okay. And I don't know about you, all I ever wanted to be was okay. I don't care about that grandiosity stuff. I don't need all that stuff in my life. Just let me be okay. And I walked in that meeting, and there was a meeting, and there was all these people here, and there was a skylight, and the only person that I could see was my sponsor. And I walked up to him, and I said, man, listen, I just got out of this rehab, and I need a sponsor. And he said, it'll be an honor. And what got me was I didn't know that the guy that I had talked to on the phone who told me to go to my meeting was his sponsor. I didn't know that then. I didn't know the path that God was placing before me. I didn't know that when he said, if you just follow what I put in front of you, your life was going to get so much better. And I can prove it to you by the things that happened in my life. The 2 days before I got out of rehab, the Friday before I got out of rehab, get this, I went to nursing school to be a nurse. Graduated from nursing school. Could not get a job. I guess with the sunken eyes, the drawn in face, all that kind of stuff. They looked at me and said, I don't think he's the material that we want. Okay? But they had called me the Friday before I was to get out, and they had talked to my mother. My mother said, I'll give a message to him. Thanks, Art. Oh, thanks, John. I said, I love these guys. I'm going to tell you something, man. When you stay in recovery, you're going to meet people that are going to do such wonderful things for your spirit that it's going to be out of this world. But you have to stay here. You have to. You have to enjoy what's being offered to you. You have to understand it is a gift of recovery. It's something that's freely being given to you. But get this. My mother got the phone call, and I called her that evening. She said, you need to call these people because they called you about a job. Now get this. I called the people and they said, listen, I'm in the rehab. My prayer to God was, if you get me a job, I'll get clean. God said, no deal. You get clean, I'll get you a job. Okay? So get this. I called the people and they said, well, we want you to come in for an interview. And I said, I can't come today. Why? You told me, don't let nobody rush you. Take your time. This is not a race, okay? You set your own pace. Walk at your leisure doing this. Enjoy the journey. Pay attention to everything going on around you. Take it all in. It's beautiful. You'll see some wonderful sights along this trail. I told him, I can't get there until Thursday. He said, fine, we'll see you Thursday. I didn't want to tell him I didn't get out to rehab until Wednesday. It didn't sound like that'd be a great thing to tell somebody on your first job interview. But I show up. This guy says to me, he says, you know, I picked up your application. I seen you got out of school in February, never had a job. So I wasn't interested in you, so I stuck your application in the pile. And I said, okay. And he said, but I left the room and I came back and I picked up another application, and it was yours. So I stuck it back in the pile. And I did something else and I picked up another application, and it was yours. And he said, well, you know, I'll put it under the bottle. And then he left the room and came back a little while later and picked up an application, and it was mine. He said, I got to get this guy in here. I go on this interview, and we're sitting there, and we're talking, and he's telling me how he got out of school, and he said, you know, are you saved? And I go, I got from y'all. I'm working on it. He said, you got such a glow on you. It's like you're lighting up the whole room. He said, I don't think I want to interview you. I'm just going to hire you for the job. What God has for you, can't nobody interfere with. Okay? One person can. Jason, it's you. Did you hear me? You can interfere with every blessing that he got for you. Heather, it's you. He has a world out here for you to enjoy, for you to smile about. See, Heather was talking about her dad, and I remember a story about my dad before he passed away. The guy who moved to Las Vegas to get away from me. The guy who, after I had 2 years clean, I couldn't tell him I had to get this. I didn't trust our relationship enough just to go to Las Vegas to see him because I wanted to see him. I talked to him on the phone, but I didn't know if he was going to let me in his house. Y'all told me, get the N.A. Way magazine. Read it. See if they got conventions out there. If he don't let you in, N.A. will take you in. And that's just what I did. What I didn't know was this program had caused him to have a change of heart about me. I told him, man, I'm in Las Vegas. He said, where you at? I said, well, I'm getting ready to check into this hotel. He said, don't you dare check into a hotel. I'll be there to get you. Picked me up, took me to his house, proudly. What I didn't know was he had friends who had kids that were suffering from the disease of addiction, and he thought 2 years later I was an expert. So he had me talking to their parents, asking them what I had done. I'm going to tell you something. 2 days before my father passed away, we was talking on the phone because we had got to talking rather regularly. We got to talking so good that I came out to Las Vegas a couple times. I brought my youngest son out who he had never met. I brought my son out there. Now, the first time I went out, I sat in his chair. He told me to get out. He took his remote control off of me, and his dog growled at me. I took my son out. My son jumped in his chair. Dog jumped into his lap. He handed my son the remote control, and I got a resentment. Okay? While I was there, he took my son, dropped me off at the convention. He took my son everywhere. They went, just left me. And they had a wonderful time together. My dad caught me on a Narcotics Anonymous jacket. And he said, do you like that? I said, yeah. He said, give it to him. I said, Dad, man, a jacket's $200. He said, I don't care. These people can help my son. They can have anything I got. Parents tend to feel that way about one of the best programs that ever came across this earth. If you don't believe me, it is. We got a literature who says for the first time in the entire history of man, a new way has been made possible. A new way has been made for us. A new way that shows people who love us we can and do recover one day at a time. Get this. After I worked at that one place for a couple of years, I got fired. I went on another interview. I didn't want a job. I had started recording NA meetings, running around the country. I was having a good time, but an addict suggested, Chuck, you're having too much fun. You need to get another job. Okay? So, get this. I show up this place by a suggestion of a friend of mine. When I walk in the door, he sees me coming in the door. He says, Charles, come on, man, they're having interviews right now. I got to get you in this room. Being the addict I am, with my low self-esteem and my low self-worth, I go in the room and I sit on the wrong side of the room. They started interviewing on this side, and I'm on this side, and I'm hearing everybody talking about their experiences, all the things they have done in nursing, and the more they talk about the things they have done, I'm dropping lower and lower and lower. Listen, I cannot listen to the blessings that God got for you unless I do it with admiration for the fact that God did it for you. I got to thank God for what He did for you and appreciate the fact that He did it for you, not be jealous of you. This is your life. You deserve to enjoy it, and if you stay here, you will. I'm listening to these people. Yeah, I did brain surgery. I did a heart transplant with one eye closed. You know, and I did all this stuff. And before they got to me, there was a knock on the window. The things that we give to other people are the things that become a blessing that will be a blessing in our lives. Okay? What you give of yourself freely is a blessing that you're going to get back. Because one way or another, because of what you've done, you will be blessed by it. This woman who was knocking on the window was a nurse in her first year. She was like, I'm so scared, I don't know what to do. Y'all told me, stand up, be a man, allow confidence to grow in your life, and do what's before you. I told her, stand up, be a woman, allow confidence, tell you that you can do anything that's put before you. Her and I worked together for about a year and a half, and then she disappeared, and I didn't know where she went. But I know all the time we used to talk, and I would just tell her, you can do it, you're doing a wonderful job, don't worry about it. And she was my supervisor. Okay? I'm telling her these things. And she's doing her job, and she's doing a wonderful job, and she disappeared. She was knocking at the window, telling the interviewer, come here. The interviewer goes to the window, and they're pointing and smiling. Nobody pointed and smiled at me. Okay? I'm the guy you didn't want around. Me and my sponsor, Bob, was talking about, I was that kid in the neighborhood, your parents said, don't play with him. You're going to get in trouble if you play with him. Get this. She goes around in an interview. We say this is a spiritual program. We have to learn to do things by the Spirit. As I learn to allow my spirit to grow in me, my spirit will show me things and help me say things that I don't know how to say at any given time. But I have to be able to depend on what my spirit, what I'm learning in my spirit, and that's teaching me. Get this, I'm standing there, and get to me, and I say, listen, it's better for me to try to tell you what I haven't done than to tell you what I have done, because I've done so much doing this that I just don't know where to start. And they just busted out smiling, and then they told everybody in the middle of the room. She's telling everybody, listen, we're going to get back to y'all. We're going to tell you who we're going to hire. We usually hire everybody part-time. They said, Mr. Davis, we're hiring you right now. Nobody ever said stuff like that to me. They said, when can you start? The day I started was October 9th, 1993. That ain't just your clean date. That's your start date. That's the date that you started in this process for your life to get better. Don't interrupt your process. Don't stop the blessings that are coming your way. Don't stop. And they hired me, and I had a wonderful career. My career stopped when somebody walked up to me and said, you know, we think you would be great in this other career. Are you willing to try? And I said, I've never done that. They said, we didn't ask you what you've done. We're going by what we see. Will you try? So I started working with children. It was the most fulfilling 10 years of my life. So fulfilling. But I remember being in a state that I didn't know if I could do this. And I asked God, I said, God, you got to give me a sign on whether I can do this, because I don't know if I can do this. This ain't something that I know how to do. And I'm sitting in my house one day, and one of my nephews come running in my house and says, Uncle Chuck, we found a baby outside. I said, what are you telling me for? Find out who the baby belongs to. The baby can't talk. I said, where the baby going? He said, well, the baby is outside. You need to come. I did the same thing any self-respecting man would do. I sent my son outside to see what was going on. Who takes off the floor? My son runs outside. He comes running back in the house. Dad, you really need to get out of here. I go outside. I say, where's this baby at? They said, over there. I said, I don't see nothing but a pile of rags. They said, well, the baby's over there. So I go over, and there's a gym bag, and there's a baby in the gym bag with the cord still attached. This was a brand new, newly born baby somebody had put in a gym bag and left there. By God's grace and mercy, the baby was left by my house. I'm a nurse with 4 years of experience at the time. I know what to do with a baby. I picks the baby up. I brings the baby in my house and wraps the baby up. I tell my son, get some string so we can tie this cord off. I'm holding the cord. My son shaking like a leaf. He's shaking like a champ. He ties the cord off. I wraps the baby head up because when I got to the baby, he was turning blue. I check his airways. I have no regard to whether this baby has HIV or what. The only thing that's important to me is that I extend to this baby what has been extended to me. A handout. Narcotics Anonymous extended a handout. They said, if you let us, we'll help you. They came and got the baby. I let everybody else get the publicity. And I went off and cried because God gave me my answer. And I had 10 beautiful years of working with families, helping them meet their needs, helping fathers learn how to clean their daughters. Okay? Oh, man. It was so wonderful how fathers could get down on the floor and play with your child. Okay, children need floor time. How I taught mothers and fathers, don't ask your child why they're running. That's the dumbest question you can ask a child. Why are you running? That's why they look at you and say, you ought to be running too. Do you know how much fun this is to run? Look, I'm just running all over the place. Where am I going? Nowhere, but I'm running. Look, in our recovery, sometimes we need to let the child out so I can run. So I can have fun. So I can enjoy myself. Get this, I got laid off from that job. And a lot of people go, ooh. No, it wasn't an ooh. It was a blessing. Because I've never graduated from any place. You know, I went to nursing school. They didn't give me a cap and gown. I didn't get one. I'm an LPN. They don't get cap and gowns. I went to nurses' aid school. You know, you get a piece of paper. Thank you, great job, goodbye. Okay? But through this program here, I prayed to God for direction in my life, and I said, I would like to go back to school. He said, prove it to me. The only way I could prove it to him was before I got laid off to get enrolled in school. I seen y'all go to school. I can go to school too. I got sponsees to go to school. I can go to school too. Besides the fact that I got kicked out of every school in the Pittsburgh public school system, and I didn't think I was allowed to go to school in Allegheny County. Okay? But they accepted me. I'm in my second year of college right now, and I love it. And I tell young people, if I get a where's he at? Here's my hero right there. That's my nephew. Loving to death. More than what he can imagine. I wish at times I could do far more for him than what I can. But by God's blessing me to let him see me for who I am. My values. Okay? My virtues. My integrity. I let him see that. Okay? I let him see that I'm a man. I'm a man that when I say this, this is what I mean. I'm going to do this. I'm going to let you see this is what men do. Get this. He get honors in math. I'm like, yay. He get honors in science. I'm like, yay. They called him and said, citizenship. And I jumped up out of my chair. And I jumped so high, I screamed so loud, everybody in the auditorium turned to see who I was. Because my nephew got high honors in citizenship. And I ain't never even could spell citizenship when I was in school. Okay? There was no citizenship. I was an alien then. Okay? That's what it was when I was his age. So alienated because of this disease that I could not enjoy life. I didn't know how to live life on life's terms. I didn't know how to be a young man enjoying the things that life could offer me. Regardless of how hard things got, I couldn't do that. See, I could do these things today. A lot of times I live some things to my children. Get this. My ex called me on the phone once and said, your daughter. Whenever she called me on the phone, she goes, your daughter. Because then she's my daughter. Okay? Your daughter says, I can't help her. She needs your help. Because my daughter went on the run. Okay? She was out there just like us. I even remember one morning trying to find her. And I'm standing out on the corner trying to find her in my van. And I see the girl walk past that I thought was my daughter. And I jumped out the car and I said, Markia! And it wasn't Markia. And the girl sitting there shaking like a leaf. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. Here, take my cell phone, call the police. I won't run. Put my hands. I'm used to that. You know, you get used to some positions. So I get the position. You know, I'm going to stand there waiting for the police to come. And she says, oh, I'm sorry. And she said, it's okay. I'm okay. I said, are you sure? I'll buy you lunch, dinner, or a car, anything. Are you okay? You know, she says, yeah, I'm okay. You just scared me. I said, I'm so sorry. You know, but my daughter was out there. And I didn't want her out there. I remember mother called me once and said, listen, they found the body up in these hills. I think it's your daughter. She hung up the phone on me. That was the hardest phone call I ever made when I called that morgue. And I had all my information in front of me. I called the morgue. I said, this is who I am. This is my social security number. This is my driver's license number, my blood type, my birth certificate, the internet. I'm going to give you everything. He said, man, what do you want? I said, you found a body up in East Hills, and I need to know if it's my daughter or not. He said, how old is your daughter? I think at the time she was about 26. He says, no, man, it was an old woman. It ain't your daughter. But then my daughter got in the rehab, okay? My daughter called me on the phone and said, will you help me? And the same thing that y'all told me, yeah, I told her, yeah. Did it again. I ain't eating nothing, though. I even brought her to this retreat. I don't know, sometimes I remember my daughter being at this retreat. But my daughter been to this retreat. And she's still clean. You know? Right now she's coming up on 3 years. No, 4 years clean, excuse me. She's living her life as a result of what y'all did. See, y'all taught me how to create an atmosphere that an addict can feel comfortable in. And you told me how important it is to feel it, commit, to create that atmosphere. You know? The things that you've given me in recovery is far more than what... I listen. I told John I could never pay him back for, you know, Rich, you know, Art. Listen, where's my roughneck at? You know, I was telling Matt, I was just listening to a CD that he did back in 02. Because I hear your message. You have such a beautiful, romantic, sweet message that it just touches me on the inside. And most of the time, all I can do is smile and thank God for the blessing of you. And it's not just a message that you give me, it's a message that we carry to the rest of the world. What we do together. You know, it doesn't matter how many of us do it as long as we do it. Okay? We always got to understand that it's not something that I can do by myself. I can't never believe that I can do this by myself. I'm always going to need you. Whether you're going through something, whether you don't feel good about yourself, whether you're feeling, how do you say, I don't cuss anymore, but a few inches below, well, do. Okay? You know, that's the way we feel. And I'm telling you, I've been telling a few people, my life is getting ready to change. And I feel it because of the work that I've been doing. Okay? But I got a wealth of knowledge in tapes, in literature. Me and John was talking about the literature. I got to tell you a literature story before I close. I did H&I at the methadone clinic, and I was trying to collect the basic text. Once again, I ain't got no money. Okay? When I was getting ready to quit the H&I commitment, I'd been doing it for 5 years. I'd been recording retreats. Every time I would do a retreat, all my excess tapes, I would take to the methadone clinic. I would lay it on the table. Half the time, they wouldn't take them. But I would lay them because we got to keep in mind that even though we offer, not everybody wants this. And it's okay that they don't want it. The only thing that matters is that we offer it. We keep it available. Okay? That's our job right there. God will put the desire in people. Because I pray none of y'all think you really picked your clean date. Okay? You didn't pick that date. God picked that date for you. It's up to you to do whatever you want to do with the gift that He gave you. So get this. I walk in on what was supposed to be my last day, and I walk in, and there's a cake there. And they got gifts for me. And I'm sitting there saying, what's going on? They said, oh man, we have appreciated you being here so long that we just wanted to have a party, thanking you for what you've done here for us. Thanking you for, you know, because of the time that it ain't me, and I know it ain't me. Okay, but other people will look at you and say, it's because of what you did. But keep in mind, listen carefully, God gives you the privilege to carry the message the way you do and when you do. Okay? It's a privilege that you have from being a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And on the table was a basic text with a cover on it said, 5th edition. And I said, wow, they gave me a basic text and everything. And I was going home and I looked at this basic text and somehow or another the cover came off. Listen, it was a 4th edition of the basic text, the very book that I had been looking for. Only it was wrapped differently. Some of the gifts that we get from each other ain't going to be wrapped the way you may want it. But when you look at the gift and take it for what it is, you find out it is exactly what you needed. Because sometimes we have to give it to you like that. Okay? And you may not like it. I got sponsees. They'll tell you in a minute, I'll probably piss them off. You hear them laughing, right? I piss them off. But I'd rather piss you off and hurt your feelings and help you save your life. So if you get mad at your sponsor, it's okay. Because he really just wants to save your life. But sometimes you have to get mad to really see a situation from a different angle. And it's okay to be mad. And it's okay. Because after you see the truth of things, you realize, man, that's just my sponsor. I used to hate my sponsor and my grand sponsor. They used to say stuff to me that I just thought was illegal. You know? But I'm going to tell you something. If you're new and you have a sponsor, here's something you don't know. Listen to this. If you listen to your sponsor for a long, long time, he's going to fill you up with some really good stuff that one day he's going to need. And you're going to be able to say it right back to him. And he's going to look at you and say, he said that to me. Get this. I have a sponsee that suffered from depression. Love him dearly. I used to say, get up, put your clothes on, go to a meeting, and call me when you get home. I got fired from a job. He called me, and he said, what are you doing, Chuck? I said, I ain't doing nothing. He said, you got your clothes on? I said, no. He said, Chuck, listen, you need to get up, put your clothes on, go to a meeting, and call me when you get back. You know, what we put in people, we're going to get back. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know how long I've been speaking, but I had a funny feeling it's time for me to quit. Okay? You know, but I'm going to tell you, Laurel Mountain Highlands, collectively, you gave me an honor that I didn't think that I would ever get. Okay? I never thought that I'd ever get to stand up here on a Sunday morning and talk to you. But see, I'm also say this. It's the unexpected dreams and gifts that are the most wonderful ones. It's the ones that come your way that you just didn't know was coming. Okay? It's the blessings of life that God gives us to other people that fills our lives and makes us appreciate what he has truly given us. Okay? It's available to us all just as it says. And this journey never stops. Okay? Even my life right now, I know the changes that are come. It's not the end of the road. It's a bend in the road, as my partner Ronnie G used to say all the time. God bless him before he passed away. You know? There's a lot of things that a lot of people gave me. My partner Dave Tree, I love him to death. He passed away this year. Dave gave me such wonderful things. But the most amazing thing he told me came with a warning. He says, Chuck, listen to this. What, how'd he put that? He says, denial dies a half hour after the addict does. It took years for me to understand that. It took years for me to understand when he said, Chuck, bad company will ruin good character. I didn't understand that when he said that. I didn't understand when Curtis R. told me, Chuck, keep coming back. I had 30 days clean. I didn't know what that meant. I thought he was getting smart with me. I didn't understand when my sponsor told me, Chuck, you know, your hand's like a bad neighborhood. Anytime you find yourself stuck up in there, you need to call me. I didn't understand none of that stuff. I don't understand when my grand sponsor sat there and listened to this great idea I had for an hour, and then when I got done, he said, you know, that's the stupidest thing that I ever heard, but please do it, because I want to see what happens. I need things to laugh about. Okay? I didn't understand that stuff. That stuff hurt my feelings. But I kept coming, and I kept coming, and I kept coming. Okay? And I love it when I see a person celebrate a year and I see somebody with 18 years. You know why I love people for with 18 years? Because many times a person with 18 years, why I got 17 years, is from the class of 93. Did you say something, kid? Class of 93? That's my class, the class of 93. That's where my blessing happens. And I thank God for everybody who got clean in 93 because I love seeing them celebrate. I love seeing them stand up, and I don't get jealous of them. There's not a person in NA or in this world anymore that I need to be jealous of because I have my own life. This is my life. This is the life that I get to live. I can tease with you. I mess with John. You know, keep my car clean. Now, Mel got a convertible Mustang. He better keep it clean. You know? But I feel good. about how I can talk to people, and more than anything else, how I can love you. Because I love you more than what you can imagine. What you give me, the atmosphere that you create for me that allows me to be me. Look, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to see and pray to God that I can do this right. Okay? But listen to this. I am powerless. We are strong. We've come to believe a higher power leads us on. A guiding light shines on our path. The desire not to use is ours at last. We pray and look into the corners of our mind and will survive as a group if we do no crime. We talk to God, ourselves, and another human true and carry a message to others who use. We get ready to have God do his thing. Lending our name puts the mess in our game. We get humble and ask God what we have to do. Self-support is our golden rule. We make a list and check it twice. We're not pros, but we'll work at night. Some things we just can't do anymore. We don't organize. We create service boards. We look at ourselves sincerely each and every day and have no opinion on what others say. We pray and ask God just what we have to do. Using attraction is our golden rule. And as we awake to carry this message God's way, with spiritual anonymity and our spiritual principles, we learn to live just for day. Lord Mount Highlands, I thank you so much for allowing me to be here with you this morning. I love you more, and that's all I got.